Bob Miller's Top 10 Keys to Safe Flight. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. Bob also has Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated, located near Buffalo in New York State. And Bob, I noticed you had been scheduled to appear Saturday, June 14th at a fly-in in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and your topic was advertised as Pilot Proficiency, Top 10 Keys to Safe Flight. And I didn't want to get you on here again without at least picking your brain and tell us what some of those were. First, thanks for joining us today.
Again, Paul, my pleasure as always.
All right. So we won't have time, obviously, here to recap what was designed to be a 45-minute talk. And presumably our listeners may find other opportunities in the future to catch that particular talk from you. But give us a little inkling about what kinds of things you're getting at here in your top 10 list.
There are 10 things. In fact, there are dozens of things that we as aviators should be doing to improve our proficiency. But based upon accident data that we know full well is focusing on or as a result of just a handful of things that we pilots continue to do over and over and over again that lead to most of the fatal accidents. And what I attempted to do in putting this talk together was to try and immunize ourselves against those very things that do cause us a problem. One is one of the things that we can do is practice slow flight. I had a conversation with Dick Van Grunsven of Vans Aircraft at Sun and Fun, and I asked him the key question. I said, you know, what do you think of the status of your customers in terms of their pilot proficiency? And he went immediately without hesitation to the subject of slow flight, maneuvering flight. Maneuvering flight is the flight condition that results in the most accidents. Not necessarily the most fatal accidents, but accidents that result in significant damage. And they could be mitigated or prevented just if we had developed better slow flying skills and understanding how an airplane flies at the low end of its operating envelope. So anytime we can go up and fly, put the airplane into a slow flight condition, maneuver with the stall horn sounding just several knots above stall, practice turns, practice climbs, practice descents, see how that airplane flies at that low end, and develop the kinesthetic feeling, the body senses of what the airplane is doing at that low end. That's number one.
Well, let me get back to your statistical comment, too. I think if you add in all the accidents that happen on landing that are related to an inability to properly control the aircraft in that type of slow flight, maybe that is a bigger problem than we give it credit for.
Oh, absolutely. And if we combine poor slow flight skills with gusty crosswinds, we have a surefire formula for disaster. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago in one of our podcasts, that how do we attain proper speed control? If we have gusty, windy conditions, speeds are going to be a bit higher. If we come in with just a stall landing in gusty crosswinds, we're going to have a nasty situation possibly evolving. So that's another one of the top 10, of course, and that goes almost in every sense, practicing crosswind landings, practicing gusty wind landings. A third area, very closely akin to maneuvering accidents, is the fact that we still suffer one fatal stall spin accident a week in the United States. And not to open up that barroom argument, to use a pet phrase of yours again, but this notion that spin training is not required for the private pilot, I think is a very, very dangerous way to prepare students or pilots for the challenges that await them. And I know that this is a highly controversial field or subject matter, but I think that every pilot ought to find an airplane and suitable instruction so that they can experience firsthand what an airplane feels like as it goes from a stall to a yaw to a spin. And so that kind of training should take place every year. The fourth one in my list is emergency procedures. There are so many potential problems that can beset us in the air, that if we have the presence of mind to instinctively evoke the right response at the right time, we can more often than not save the day. And there are certain emergency procedures that rise above all others. And I think the likelihood of an engine failure, though remote, is indeed a real risk in a single-engine airplane, as it is in a multi-engine airplane. And knowing what to do instinctively when that happens and the steps that we're going to take. What are we going to do if there's a fire on board? What are we going to do if we suffer a catastrophic loss of all electrics, particularly on the new technologically advanced airplanes that are all dependent on electrical systems? Mm-hmm. Knowing instinctively what to do there. Cirrus has made it the ultimate ease of getting out of the emergency is to reach up and pull the handle and come down on a ballistic chute. Well, that's an effective solution from some perspectives, but from another, it's a terrible waste of a perfectly good airplane when in fact there were other things that we could have done to mitigate that that experience. So I believe that this kind of training, like going to the dentist every 6 months, and it doesn't take a certified flight instructor to provide this kind of training. We as individual pilots can go up with our buddy, and while going to that near or far $100 hamburger or $200 hamburger, yes, or fly-in breakfast, whatever, we definitely need to make some of these procedures part of our regular training, part of our regular flying.
I'm talking to Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back with more of Bob's Top 10 Keys to Safe Flight in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près de moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News Special Feature. I'm Paul Plack, and I'm talking today with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the Journal for the Proficient Pilot. And Bob recently gave a talk entitled Pilot Proficiency, the Top 10 Keys to Safe Flight. Bob, I think we've talked about some of the obvious ones. What are some other of these keys to safe flight that maybe are getting missed by a lot of people coming through the training experience?
I think one area that we all pride ourselves in making greaser landings, and we work very, very hard to make that landing perfect every time. And as a result, when we are successful in doing that, we lose the skill sets required to recover from bad landings. And one of the things that I do with my students as they progress towards check ride is I will deliberately upset an otherwise good landing. And when I mean upset, just as the wheels are just about ready to kiss the runway in a perfectly executed landing, I'll surreptitiously give a strong tug on the yoke in front of me and pull the airplane into a very high pitch-up attitude, almost to the point of stall. And then I'll give the student about a half a second to make the appropriate corrective response. And if he doesn't, of course, I'm there making the correct appropriate response. And I'm talking specifically about ballooned and bounced landings. Every one of us have done them, high-time pilots as well as low-time pilots. And it's not so much the balloon or the bounce that hurts us. It's the recovery, or how effective that recovery is, that will ultimately determine whether or not we had a safe outcome. And so, and this may take a little bit of training or with the right instructor, but deliberately induce balloon or bounce landings. And we can do that by hitting the runway just a little too fast, or just as we're coming over, just as we're settling down on the runway, just give a quick pull on the stick or the yoke to get that airplane into a very high nose-up attitude, and be prepared now at this point to make the corrective control responses, which, of course, is number one, lower the nose. Number two, full power.
Mm-hmm.
Get the airplane flying again. That's all we have to do. Just get it flying again, and at that point make a decision as to whether or not we have enough remaining runway to land again, or do we need to go around.
Special notice here to anybody who has a Cessna 172 on lease back to Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated. Bob maintains complete control.
We haven't lost one yet, Paul.
All right.
I will say that. But I have a good friend, my mentor in aviation, Lou Nelbone, down at runs Dunkirk Aviation Sales and Service. He calls this technique immunizing your students against a prop strike. And that could be a title of a 45-minute talk in and of itself, immunizing your students against an inadvertent prop strike. And that's how we do it. Just, God forbid we have a student that makes every landing perfect, and then we sign him off, and then after he has a certificate, he encounters a bad landing and has no idea how to recover, prevent that nose from dropping down into the pavement. And that's really what we want to achieve, is to have the pilot instinctively know what to do when that instantly after that airplane takes a hard bounce with a nose sticking high up in the air.
I came close on a prop strike one time, but it had nothing to do with that. I was coming in for a landing at an airport which shall remain nameless, and neglected to tell the people that I was a student, the tower, that I was a student pilot. And for some reason, my voice must exude confidence, because they did not cut me any slack at all. And I was in an Aranca Champ, and they wanted me to turn off at the first taxiway. And I made it, but I almost did the thing up on its nose. And
I think
that was the day I learned the word unable.
good. That should be number one word in the pilot's vocabulary. Unable.
Yes. Bob, we appreciate it as always, and I will talk to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
Bob Miller has been my guest. You can find out more at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.